I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Reasons to be Cheerful with Ed Miliband and Jeff Lloyd.
Happy Christmas!
Happy Christmas to you and to all our listeners.
I'm so touched that you chose to spend it with me rather than your family.
I know. Well, I just felt, you know, it was just a very special time. And, they understand, you know, it's a bit like when you're sort of dating someone for the first time, you know, you go to one set of parents or another. And they understand that this year I'm spending it with you. And, you know, next year I'll hopefully be back with them, and it'll alternate each year.
We'll see about that. Maybe I can come. We got Christmas crackers.
Great.
We should start by pulling one, shouldn't
definitely.
We?
Definitely. Oh, you won.
Yeah.
But I'm not bitter. We better pull another one.
Hang on, I'm just going to put my hat on, my crown.
It's a very sort of fetching orange hat.
It is, which is my colour. All right, here we go, Ed. I'm going to let you win this one. What on earth did you do there? Have you ever pulled a cracker before?
I have, yeah, but you're about to win again. Right.
Ed has a purple crown.
I
have an orange one.
I'm going to put my purple one on.
Do you want to hear my joke?
Yep, definitely.
Question.
Yep.
What did Santa say to the smoker?
I don't know. What did Santa say to the smoker?
Please don't smoke. It's bad for my elf.
Oh, dear. Right, you want to hear mine?
There was an optimism there. You expected
it to be
a good
joke. What do you call a cat in the desert?
I don't know. What do you call a cat in a desert?
Sandy Claus. Do you love Christmas?
I do like Christmas, yeah. So I'll always have the Christmas music going.
Yeah.
On Christmas morning. And only in recent years have I involved myself in the cooking of Christmas dinner. So I'm vegetarian, so I don't have any turkey to worry about. But 2 years ago was my first attempt at cooking a proper Christmas dinner.
How did it go?
We sat down at 10:15 in the evening to eat something that had originally been planned to be eaten around 3 p.m.
Was that just you and Sarah?
It was just me and Sarah, yeah.
But that's not the first time that's happened, is it?
No, It's because I'm an optimist, basically. This is Reasons to be Cheerful, and I am optimistic about the amount of time it will take me to cook something. And roast potatoes, turns out far more difficult than you'd have thought. I went with the Aunt Bessie's the next year, the frozen ones. Mm. What about yourself?
I'm not a person who cooks on Christmas Day because I think the sort of responsibility is too great. We're at my... if I wasn't here, I would be with my in-laws in Nottingham. My mother-in-law sort of takes care of. I mean, I'll do some chopping and washing up and everything, but I think the responsibility of cooking at Christmas feels like a bridge, sort of somewhat a bridge too far.
Are you actively kept away from the
kitchen? Yeah, kept, but I think everybody's kept away from the kitchen by my mother-in-law. As long as she's in her kitchen, she'll, you know, she wants complete control.
Do you bother with the Queen's speech?
I'll play back. It's not the right time. It's in the afternoon, isn't it? My father always used to, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? It's a Marxist, you know, man who hated Britain famously. Yeah. He always used to want to know about the Queen's speech. He used to, his two big things were the King's College Choir on Christmas Eve, which I actually try and listen to, and the Queen's speech. And he would want to know what was in the Queen's speech. I think it must be a thing of an emigre, you know, that it's sort of the thing you always did. And, you know, you listen to the Queen's speech and then you watch the Queen's speech. He wasn't like a monarchist, but it's sort of interesting.
But that's an interesting thing. Like, whatever your views on the monarchy, it is astonishing that we've been able to have the Queen on Christmas Day making this speech for our entire lives. And she's never once said anything memorable.
Annus Horribilis in, or was that, was that not in the Queen's speech message? Maybe it was in a speech.
Right, yeah. I mean, we only remember that because it sounds a bit like anus.
Yeah, that's true.
And everything else, every year she comes on for 10 minutes and you can't remember anything she's said ever. Like, you've got to respect the neutrality of that.
What's your favourite thing that you enjoy at Christmas? Opening the presents?
Yeah, are you extravagant gift givers?
Not really, no. It's more about our kids now. You know, I've got my birthday the day yesterday, so, you know, it's kind of a...
It's a two-present, one present. Everybody always asks you this, yeah. But is that awful?
No, it's quite nice, but it's sort of, you know, there's a sort of joint present situation. I think it's worse to have... I would imagine it's worse to have your birthday after Christmas. Because then it's sort of, you're part of the hangover. Mm. At least you're part of the building of the excitement.
Yeah.
But it's all of our family, lots of our family were clustered around Christmas. So my grandmother was on Christmas Day. My mum is on the 22nd. My dad was on January the 7th. So we were all clustered around that time.
Mm-hmm. Very fertile time, spring.
Indeed. Thanks for pointing that out. Just thanks for connecting the dots. So what's your favourite thing that you like doing on Christmas Day?
So I am a big, this makes me sound very boring, which I am, but I'm a big TV watcher.
Are you?
So I try to make it festive with as many sort of Christmassy films and things as possible.
Really?
So we always watch The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, the old 60s animation. We watch Charlie Brown Christmas specials and Muppet Christmas Carol, which I think Michael Caine's portrayal of Scrooge in that is the best screen portrayal of Scrooge. He plays it with a completely straight bat, as if he wasn't acting with a bunch of frogs and bears and whatever Gonzo is. And as a consequence, it's really something. Do you know that film?
I don't really.
Oh, you should just watch it. Christmas Day.
I will.
Me and you in a few minutes, yeah, okay. Once we've done this.
And what about the fact that everything closes down over Christmas? Do you like that or not so much?
I could do without that.
Yeah, sort of, so could I. But it's quite nice for the people who would otherwise be having to work. I once spent Christmas in...
What about me when I want a Twix?
I once spent a Christmas in New York, and it is a completely different experience because everything is open. You can go to the cinema.
Yeah.
It's just like a normal day.
Well, my wife's family, I've mentioned before, are Jewish, and Christmas Day for them is traditionally going for Chinese food, then going to the pictures to see a film.
Do you go for a walk? Do you exercise on Christmas Day?
No, I mean, why change the habits of the rest of the year? You know, why break tradition? What I don't like about a walk on Christmas Day, and you will love this, I know, is the saying Merry Christmas to everybody you encounter.
Oh, that's great.
But what if it then led to further conversation?
It's animate objects. It's this animate objects problem, isn't it? It's inanimate, as you know, it's inanimate objects that I've got to be particularly careful on Christmas Day.
And what time do your kids get up?
Oh, God. I mean, you know, obviously, it's good, you know, thankfully I'm not there today, but, you know, it's been sort of, you know, 5 or 6, I think. But it's sort of quite strict sort of, I mean, I think the excitement is sort of, grows, you know, stronger every year.
Yeah.
I can't quite work out whether they, how they feel, if I can put it sort of euphemistically in case they're listening, about Father Christmas.
I think broadly people are positive towards him. You don't hear broadly that much in the way of criticism.
His approval ratings are reasonably high. I think he's had a few, you know, he's had a few sort of moments.
PR disasters.
A few lost presents and stuff.
Have they written letters to Father Christmas?
Yes, they have.
Did you proofread them first?
I think Justine did. But I think, you know, if I can put it this way, I think it's a sort of hedging of bets. They see it as a sort of present maximisation.
Right.
Rather than a sort of, you know, not just an elf and reindeer situation, if you see what I mean.
Shall we talk about what we're doing here for our Christmas?
Yes. Well, the sort of most kind of fun thing we're going to be doing is we are going to be playing the childhood game that I played, Class Struggle. There's no better way to spend to spend Christmas Day than sitting down to a nice board game, which involves workers and capitalists, as the old saying doesn't go.
Now, people will know about this from previous episodes. Other people play Monopoly in the Miliband household of Marxist academics. They had Class Struggle.
Exactly.
And we've been able to source a copy of this board game. And we're going to be going downstairs into my kitchen where we've got it all set up. We have mince pies and we have people coming around as well.
We do. And we are delighted to be joined by Joel Corner. And people will know Joel from the Twitterverse because he set up an account called the Milliverse.
Right. And we're outing him. This is the first time he's been outed publicly as the man behind the Milliverse.
Will be with us playing Class Struggle, talking about the Milliverse. And also the brilliant Bridget Christie.
Like one of our finest comedians.
One of our finest comedians who will also be playing. Are you a competitive board game player, or do you like, are you one of those people who hates the competition?
I often will not play a game because I hate competition so much.
Is it because you hate the losing or the sort of competition and the people get into a sort of thing?
It's more that I don't need reminding that I'm a loser in life. There's no way I'm going to win Class Struggle.
Well, I think if we show solidarity
is that the point of it? Everyone wins.
Workers of the world unite. No, I don't think so. There is a nuclear war square, I'm afraid, as well, which seems to end the game in a rather sort of final fashion.
So that's going to be happening soon. We're going to be going down into the kitchen and playing Class Struggle. But before that, we have something, a bit more serious. I mean, we don't want to ruin Christmas for people. But, we are cognizant of the fact that Christmas can be tough for some people too.
Yeah, and some people are lonely. And we're going to be talking to two people about that. We're going to be talking to Rachel Reeves, my fellow Labour MP, who recently produced the report of the Loneliness Commission. That was something that was set up by Jo Cox MP before she was tragically killed. And Rachel has taken it forward, and it's dealing with the issue of loneliness in our society and what we can do, really. And then Sarah Millican, an absolutely brilliant comedian who actually set up herself a sort of Twitter antidote to loneliness, hashtag join in, which we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, and then at the end of the podcast, we're all going to be doing a conga, a big festive conga.
Have you organised the conga?
No, I thought you were organising the conga.
Oh, I thought it was you that was organising
the conga. Maybe the conga won't be happening.
Reasons to be cheerful with Ed Miliband and Jeff Lloyd.
Now, obviously at Christmas, it's great to be with friends and family. It's special already. But some people are on their own. And recently, my colleague Rachel Reeves, the Member of Parliament for Leeds West, completed the work of the Jo Cox Loneliness Commission and published a report about the issue in our society and what we can do about it. And I'm delighted to say that Rachel joins us. Hi, Rachel.
Hello there.
Great to have you on the podcast. Tell us a little bit, first of all, what your findings of the Loneliness Commission were.
Well, the key finding really is that 9 million people report themselves as lonely always or often. And I think that should be a sobering fact for all of us to remember. In every family and every street and every friendship group, there's somebody who's experiencing loneliness. And Jo Cox was determined to do something about that. And that's why after Jo was murdered, I agreed to take on that work along with the Conservative MP, Seema Kennedy, to try and tackle loneliness and to start a conversation about it, really.
And having done the report, I suppose one question is, what surprised you about having done this work?
I think one thing is that loneliness can affect people at any time of their life. Now, I guess we sort of know that, but when we have in our mind an image of somebody who's lonely, most of us would think perhaps of an elderly old lady sitting in her flat and has outlived her friends and family. But actually, loneliness can affect any of us at any time of our life. And, heard lots of moving stories during the year about disabled people, 50% of whom on any given day say that they are lonely, carers, new mums, refugees and asylum seekers who often come to this country having fled terrible situations and not able to speak English, often not here with friends or family. and their experiences of loneliness as well. But, you know, there's some positive aspects as well. And in your constituency, Ed, in Doncaster, and in mine in Leeds West, there's loads of fantastic things going on, led usually by community groups and the voluntary sector, but also in libraries, in children's centres, in community centres up and down the country to try and combat loneliness and bring people together. And Brendan Cox and Joe's family, on the 1 year anniversary of Joe's death, organised the Great Get Together, and more than 9 million people participated in that, bringing their communities together. And that was a really heartwarming moment in many ways, and a reminder of what Joe said, that we have more in common than that which divides us. And I think tackling loneliness is about better communities, a better connectedness, looking out for people, you know, living our lives a little bit more like Joe lived hers, really.
And having done the report, what are the key things that we can change as a society to combat what is obviously an absolutely massive problem affecting millions of people, do you think?
Well, we've said that there's no big policy solution, and the answer is sort of human scale and step by step. And it starts with each and every one of us. It's about starting a conversation. It's about knocking on someone's door. And one of the things we talk about in our report is about the permission of snow. And when it's snowing, and it has been, and it will do again in the next 2 weeks, I expect, when it snows, you feel that you can go and knock on a neighbour's door and say, can I help you with your shopping? Are you okay getting out? Do you need me to clear your drive for you? But it's about how can we create that permission all the time, so we look out for other people.
We should have a snow psychology all year round, is what you're saying.
Yes, but not snow all year round. We don't want that. Well, I don't anyway. But that permission, really, to talk to people. And you shouldn't need something like snow or a big event to knock on the door of your neighbour or phone up a relative or to look out for someone. It should be something that we do in our everyday
lives.
Now,
Rachel, I've got a question for you. What about people like Jeff who don't like talking to other people?
Well, people like Jeff are part of the problem, aren't they?
Yeah. No, he's part of the solution, surely.
He talks to you, Ed.
It's true.
Yeah, but
go on, Jeff. Come on.
Pity.
Come on, Jeff.
You're my pity.
Let me stop talking about you as if you're not here. Come on, yeah. Talk to Rachel.
Well, I've said to you before, Ed, like, I like the idea of human kindness. It's just sort of individual human interactions that I struggle with a little bit.
Do you ever knock on the door of your neighbours? Do you know your neighbours, Jeff?
Yeah, I know them. Like, they're very nice people. I wouldn't want them coming across my threshold.
Let's hope they're not listening to this.
We've got to do some work. Jeff is a work in progress, I think, Rachel. I think it's
in Yorkshire, Jeff. I don't know where you're from. In Yorkshire, it's much more friendly. I think people do look out for each other a bit
I'm
more.
I'm from the north originally, and I think it's since I've lived in London nearly 20 years, and I think it's
you need to come back.
Yeah, I think that's what's happened to me. It's the longer I live down here.
But there is this sort of, you know, mentality when you're in the tube, especially, but you know, also commuting in Leeds and Doncaster and elsewhere, that you've got your head down, your headphones on.
Yeah,
we are all, I expect Jeff and Ed, you're as guilty of it as me, you know, even when we're with our friends and family, always checking our phones.
No, Ed's asking people if they want selfies left, right and centre.
Well, I do start conversations, or people start conversations with me, but I think it's really interesting what Rachel's saying, which is that you've got to sort of transfer that psychology not just to people who do come up to you, but people who don't, or you know, sort of people who are going to be on their own. And I think it's finding ways to reach out to people. I think that is right.
I'm very good at keeping an Amazon parcel for someone. I'm very good at popping around
with the
parcel.
Don't you think that's a start, Rachel?
You can tick that box, Jeff. You're a good neighbour.
Yeah, I'm a good neighbour.
That is a start. Now, Rachel, it's Christmas time. What can people do at Christmas time? Because that is the time when loneliness can really, really come home to people, particularly Christmas Day. What are the things that you would encourage people doing, or that your commission kind of would encourage people to do?
Well, the Joe Cox Foundation and myself and Seema, who co-chairs the commission with me, are encouraging people to take part in the Great Christmas Get-Together. And we call it the mince pie moments, where we might knock on the door of a neighbour or organise an event, or just invite someone round to share a mince pie and a cup of tea or a glass of sherry or whatever takes your fancy, and spend some time with someone. Put down your phone, reach out to somebody who perhaps you've been meaning to phone or meaning to pop round and see for the last few months or the last few years, and make time for them. Because, you know, what do we value in our lives? We value our friends and our family and our human relationships, and yet the way we act in our lives, you wouldn't know that at all, because we spend far too much time glued to our phones, glued to our computers, at work or working from home. And it's about putting other people first. And so I think Christmas is a great time. The Great Christmas Get-Together is about encouraging people to take that small step and that small act of kindness, which I think anybody can participate in. You, Ed, Jeff as well.
So the message is to people listening to this podcast, press pause. You can carry on playing, but go out, talk to everyone. Knows somebody who might be alone on Christmas Day, somebody in their street, somebody they might know, or around the Christmas time. And it's not that difficult, is it, Rachel?
It's not. I'm just thinking about it now, and there's people who I've been meaning to phone or pop round to see, and it's about using that time over Christmas to go and knock on that person's door, to give them a call, to share a mince pie, to show that you care. And I think step by step and through all our individual actions and together as a community, we can tackle this real problem in our communities of loneliness.
Fantastic. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you also for educating Jeff.
Happy Christmas, both of you.
And thank you. Merry Christmas to
happy
you.
Happy Christmas.
I've invited you around on Christmas Day. You're here.
You have.
Well, you keep looking at your phone, checking the Milliverse.
It's true.
Be a bit more present.
It's true. Happy Christmas, Rachel.
So we're now joined on Christmas Day by Sarah Milliken. Hello. Happy Christmas.
Hello.
Happy Christmas, Sarah.
Christmas, guys.
How are you spending Christmas?
I'm spending Christmas with family, a small amount of family, like the good ones, and and my little dog.
What's your dog called?
Oh, my dog is called Commander Tuvok.
Commander Tuvok?
yes.
What?
So Tuvok is from Star Trek Voyager, and he was a rescue, so that's his given name. So when you get rescue a dog, you have to keep their name. So we were really pleased, though, because both of our cats have got a rank. So we've got Chief Brody, who's from Jaws, the police chief, and we've got the other cat is Lieutenant Ripley, obviously from the Alien films.
How fantastic.
So when we found out there was a rescue dog called Tuvok, we just lengthened it and gave him his actual rank, which is Commander.
Let me ask you a big question, Sarah. Jeff's dog looks like Jeff. Does your dog look like you?
If I let my tash grow in, yes. He's got incredible eyebrows, which mine are getting it. I am clearly going to inherit my dad's eyebrows. My dad has to have them trimmed when he gets his hair cut because they get in the hinges of his glasses. So yes, I think eventually I will look a lot like my dog.
So can we ask you about the thing you're doing for Christmas? We're talking about loneliness, and you've done this thing. Is it like for the past 2-3 years?
Oh no, this is the 7th year. This
is it, God, that's gone quickly.
It's got massively out of hand. well, what it is, I'm a bit of a softie, and I feel bad at the idea of people spending Christmas Day on their own who don't want to. I know there are people who have Christmas Day on their own and bloomin' love it, and I think good for them. And also I think they're slightly winning Christmas because they just wander around in their pants all day. They don't have to hoover. All the nibbles they've got in, they can eat. They can just have cheese in their hand at all times if they want to. And they don't have to play any board games. Like, they are having the best time. But there are people who, for whatever circumstances, are on their own and would rather not be. Maybe their partner's at work, or maybe just, families are really complicated and can be quite hard work sometimes. And so,
Or people without family who,
Of course. Yeah. There's quite a lot of people who, for whatever reason, are on their own. And I just wondered if there was a way we could kind of bring them together. And obviously social media makes the most sense, rather than, like, everybody meeting at one centralised point in the middle of England. Seems a bit silly. It's a lot of travel on a terrible day for travel. So I thought Twitter might be a good idea. And we just started this hashtag. It's joinin, J-O-I-N-I-N. And people just start having conversations. So I start off, first thing this morning, first thing Christmas morning, I lay out all the rules and the regs and what we do and how we do it, and then start retweeting. There was one year that Twitter like blocked me because I was retweeting too much, and I was like, I'm doing this for good. And then now they're fine. They leave me alone now. It's fine. And then people just start piping up with, you know, what they're doing, what they've had for their breakfast, what they've got on the telly. And then so it's basically a group of people who are on their own chatting with each other, with interjections sometimes from people who are with their family but feel quite lonely because that's a thing, or just some people who are actually with their family but just chip in to in order to cheer other people up, which is also glorious. And it's a really nice way of bringing everybody together.
And Sarah, tell people who want to get involved over the Christmas period, what are the rules? What do you want them doing, whether they're with people or whether they're on their own?
Well, I think the main rule is just to be kind, and I just don't think people always think of that.
You're right.
In general life.
And on Twitter, in particular.
Yeah, well, this is why it's nice to show the good powers of Twitter, because we've all experienced the not great bit of Twitter, I'm sure.
Exactly.
But this is such a lovely way of bringing everybody together. And so what people do is they if they have to join Twitter for the day and then just don't go on it the rest of the year, that's fine as well. Just get on there, just join and follow me at SarahMilligan75, or just look at the hashtag, and within no time at all, it's up and running. And so post up what you're doing and use the hashtag. Look at what other people are doing. Have conversations. So it can't just be everybody saying, I'm watching EastEnders. It has to be somebody saying, are you enjoying EastEnders, to somebody else. So initially, people just post up what they're doing. And then after a little while, I see them all interacting with each other. And it's so lovely. And I suppose the main rules are just to be kind and also to be safe. Because just because you're chatting to somebody on Twitter and it's going really well, don't like DM them and then meet up with them on Boxing Day. just leave it as a nice, you know, like a one-day stand, if you like. Just keep yourself safe.
Do you get stick off your family for being on your phone all day?
I get looks. but this year wasn't so bad.
You've got the perfect excuse, Sarah, though, because you're doing a, like, great thing. You're not, like, you know...
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd think. But I think until people know what you're doing, they just think you're sort of texting people. So that's why I usually use an iPad rather than my phone, because then it looks, I don't know, like more like work, I guess. It looks less like I'm just texting people going, oh, my God, I can't believe what presents I got off this lot. You know, it just looks like I'm being rude. So I do let people know what I'm doing, and they do understand, thankfully. And my husband is especially understanding. But because I drove up north this morning, my husband and I drove up north this morning, I got like 3.5 hours in the car to just work my way through it. So, you know, that's my plan, is to always just try and have a bit of solid time. Last year, I sat for 5 hours. Is that really bad? I sat for 5 hours.
I don't know. It sounds like more fun than what most of us are doing on Christmas Day.
Well, that's a good point, actually. That's quite a good point. It is. It's so much fun, and you get a real glimmer of how wonderful people can be, and people really reaching out to each other. And, you know, by the end of the day, you have people saying, oh, I was really dreading today, and because of this, I've had quite a nice time. And you can dip in and out. That's the good thing about it. It's not like when you've got people around and you have to put the Hoover on to get them out. Just put your phone down if you're done for a bit, you know? I mean, that's what I don't know what you guys do. That's what I do.
What gives us a real reason to be cheerful is social media. You often hear so many horror stories and people behaving in just the worst way on it. And this is the opposite of that, right?
Yeah, it totally is. And I think it's just because... like, you get the odd person, very, very rare, but you get the odd person who'll make some kind of scathing comment about, and you just, it's so ridiculous that you just fire back, like, are you joking? And other people will pile in, and because they're so in the minority, because what we're doing is so nice, like, you cannot criticise, there's no way of criticising it. Just don't join in if you don't want to join in, but it's so... because there's no ulterior motive to any of it. It's literally lonely people, let's cheer them up.
That's a lovely thing.
That's a fantastic thing, Sarah. Well, look, hashtag join in. Everyone should get involved. Sarah Milligan, have a great Christmas. Thank you so much for joining us.
Merry Christmas, guys. Thank you so much.
Email us reasons@cheerfulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter @cheerfulpodcast, or search for our Facebook page, Reasons to be Cheerful Podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So we've relocated to the kitchen, and here it is in front of us. At last, this is something we've talked about for weeks and weeks.
It's true.
And it's here. Class Struggle, the board game. Now, this is what you had as a boy. You were forbidden from playing Monopoly in case you were corrupted by capitalism, and instead you had this game. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, this is... I think we should introduce our guest, shouldn't we? Isn't that the polite thing to do?
I thought we'd introduce the game, then introduce the guest, but we could do whichever way around you want to do it.
I think that's probably polite, actually. So sitting next to me is the wonderful, amazing, fandabby-dozy... Bridget Christie.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Has anyone described you as fandabby-dozy before?
Not since I was about three.
Right.
It dates me rather.
It's Jeanette Cranky, isn't it?
I don't know. Is it Crackerjack?
I think fandabby-dozy was the Crankies.
Was the Crankies, was it?
Crankies, was it? So. Anyway,
I haven't met them.
Wasn't allowed to watch.
It wasn't them who
said... I was too busy playing Class Struggle. Thank you so much for spending your Christmas with us.
Oh, I'm absolutely delighted. I had no plans.
Good.
My family had not included me in their Christmas plans.
God, well, you're included with us.
Thank you.
And we have Joel, who runs the Milliverse. Joel, if people don't know what the Milliverse is, can you tell us a bit about it?
Well, with all the chaos and destruction going on via Brexit and Trump and the general sort of dishevelment of the government at the moment, an idea kind of cropped up. There was a Twitter user called Mark D who said, "Meanwhile, in a parallel universe, Ed Miliband is Prime Minister and everyone's annoyed at how boring it is." And I just kind of took this idea and ran with it, and I've been wasting my time for the last year.
It normally involves my sort of kind of unfortunate encounters with inanimate objects,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Which is very much like the real universe, not
it is parallel. Like my real universe, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I've got a problem with inanimate objects. Jeff has a problem with animate objects.
Well, like you people. Can't use them, or they...
Well, they're just sort of bad things
they
tend
to happen.
They
gravitate towards you.
Like, you know, obviously the sandwich is the most famous example, but yeah, there are kind of lots of sort of examples.
He's always knocking things over, falling over, injuring himself.
There was an article the Daily Mail put out, I think, before the election, that was, I think, intended to be this big smear job, you know, where Ed Miliband's first time in Doncaster, you know, tripping over doors and setting fire to carpets, blah, blah, blah. I remember reading this thinking, this is brilliant. He's just like me.
Yeah, I was going for the clumsy vote, basically. Yeah. It didn't quite work.
But aren't really clever people supposed to be really clumsy as well?
Oh, that's nice.
All the clever people I know can't really...
Yeah. I think there was a 3.74% swing to me among clumsy people, actually, as a result. As a
problem
result
is we just
that.
Kept missing the ballot box.
Yeah, you? That's true. That might be it.
So are we now allowed to explain why we're
we
here?
We are. So we have in front of us the Class Struggle board game. For those who haven't listened to previous episodes, it's quite complicated rules, but it's not that complicated. It's basically about the struggle between the workers and the capitalists. And in a minute, we are going to roll to see who we are.
Whether we are workers or capitalists.
Well, workers, capitalists, small business owners, students, farmers. There are lots of different people you can play in this.
Right.
But fundamentally, the battle is between workers and capitalists.
Yes.
And the rules, they're long rules, and you know, I won't go into them all, but the winner of this confrontation wins the game. If the workers win, humanity enters a new era of peace, democracy and equality, which is called socialism. It sounds quite appealing. A capitalist victory, on the other hand, simply means the rich get richer while the poor are left to stew in their own juice, leading eventually to the collapse of civilization. Hence the choice before us: socialism or barbarism.
And this is fun, yes.
This is my version of fun, Bridget.
It's going to ruin Christmas if we end up with barbarism, though.
The board
isn't
looks
it?
Very complicated. Actually, you know, Monopoly did originally look a bit like this. That's why I was quite surprised when I came in and saw the middle bit, because the original Monopoly was invented by a left-wing feminist woman.
Yes.
And it was sort of passed around amongst people. There was no rules or anything. And then some guy called Charles Darrow said, oh, this is really good. And then he sold it to Parker Brothers, and he made an absolute mint.
He was a kind of male appropriation of a female
exactly.
idea, wasn't it? Outrageous.
And it's happened the amount of times that happens to me.
The number of board games you've invented.
I've invented hundreds of board games.
Can you tell us how to play? What do we need to do first?
What do we do?
Bridget, you are going to roll this dice and it's going to tell us what you are, basically.
Wow, that's handy.
And you're a dice.
You're the capitalist, right?
How are you feeling about that?
The capitalist.
I don't know. I think I'll go for it.
Okay, there you are. You've got a big top hat with a dollar sign on it, and you're at the beginning square, which is class struggle. Jeff is now going to roll.
And
you are going to be the worker.
Yes!
Ah. Jeff is the worker.
Yes.
Bridget is the capitalist.
Oh, my God.
It is the rumble in the jungle.
You better watch out with those means of production,
so
Bridget.
So basically, I'm afraid the workers are in big trouble because Jeff is their representative. Joel, you are now going to roll.
Come on, roll good.
You are the student, highly appropriate.
Yeah.
And
I can do better at university this time around.
I am the... What's that?
A handbag.
I'm a handbag. I'm going to roll again. What is that?
A handbag.
I'm a handbag.
You're a handbag.
Okay, we don't seem to have a handbag. I'm, in fact, the farmer. Right.
You
can't just change your mind.
I'm afraid we just erased the handbag.
This is slightly
unfortunate for the old feminist credentials of this game.
Is a handbag a woman?
We didn't appreciate the handbag. It is a handbag, isn't it?
Go on, what does it
say? Or is
it
a briefcase?
Oh.
Is it academics?
Is it possibly the...
What's that, a till?
One of them looks like maybe a cash register.
Cash register is that one.
Must be a piece missing.
The mortarboard?
No, it's not the mortarboard. That's the student.
Oh, and the...
It must. Are you not
about the capitalist, the farmers, the cash register, the small businesses, the briefcase.
Briefcase. And what is the briefcase? We don't have the briefcase. Okay, the briefcase piece is missing. So basically, it wasn't a handbag; it was a briefcase. But I turned out to be the farmer. Right now. The capitalist goes first, I believe, which is, I'm afraid, what life is like.
Oh my gosh!
Now I think we're going to go ahead and roll three dice. Yeah.
All at the same time.
I think so, because it'll then speed up the game.
Anything to speed this up.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I just point out that the bank is divided into debits, which say on them setback and weakness, and credit assets, which say power and growth.
It all will become apparent as the game unfolds. I think that's better than a sort of long explanation. You rolled an 8.
So what does that mean?
You move eight squares.
Capitalist control Congress, 2 assets.
Right. This is square 9, and there's an explanation. This is such a sophisticated game, there's an explanation for each square. Congress is supposed to represent all the people, but most of its members, Democrats and Republicans, this is an American game, are capitalists and lawyers for capitalist interests. It's no wonder, then, that most of the laws which Congress passes favour the capitalist class. In the words of Anatole France, the law in all its majesty forbids rich and poor alike from stealing bread and sleeping under bridges. So much for capitalists without recognizing the idea of equality under law. I wouldn't snore too much. You get 2 assets as a result of that.
Oh, is it still me?
Yeah,
great.
You get 2 assets.
Brilliant. Where do I put them?
I think you put them you hide them away in your wallet or purse or
handbag.
Handbag or briefcase. Right.
There.
Jeffrey is now rolling.
So am I rolling 3 dice here?
You are, because it's sort of speeding up the game.
So 6, 10. I go 10.
Oh, so is that on choice?
Shall I move you, Jeff?
Yes, please. I can trust you.
Are you saying Ed's never 10. Moved you before?
Right. Trade unions are established to defend workers' interests, Jeff.
Yes!
You get 3 assets.
Oh.
Bridget, you've got to hand him 3 assets. I'll tell you what it says. 11. Trade unions are established to defend workers' interests, higher wages, shorter hours, safer conditions, and the like. Only through organisation can the workers' power be felt. Workers, 3 assets.
There you
By the
go.
Way, just while
Thank
we're playing,
much.
in the end, the square 84 is where this all ends, and that is a confrontation between the capitalists and the workers, basically.
Okay. Right.
And that is the sort of final, the final decision about whether we end up in capitalism or barbarism.
How often is that a bloody revolution?
Well, the key for you, for Jeff and Bridget, is to try and make us your allies as you go along.
Right, okay.
So you're going to try and win over the farmers, and there are squares where you can do an alliance with the farmers.
Right.
Or you're also going to ring it with try and win over the students. And Jeff, you're going to try and win over the farmers and the students. That's going to increase your chances of winning when it comes to square 84.
Okay.
So that's just quite an important thing. But there are various squares where you can do an alliance and the chance cards and all that.
Okay. I really feel like I'm looking at nine-year-old Ed here and getting a real insight into
true,
the boy you
are.
Were.
You are. Right, Joel, go.
Okay.
Joel's rolled a 10.
Yeah.
So that's the same square, isn't
same
it?
Same square.
Yeah. Is he allowed on the same square? Yes, he is.
So do you get three?
Now, so the red squares are for workers and the blue squares are for capitalists,
They're not allied.
If they're not... So he's allowed, so while you're not allied to either Jeff or Bridget, you can sort of gain assets on the squares, correct? Or debits?
Yeah. I've always wanted some assets.
So you get, you've got three assets from the same square about trade union. Okay, here I am, the farmer. I got a 9.
9.
So am I on the same square as you? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I want chance.
Okay, now, so you get to pick a chance card
now,
like
I can
in Monopoly.
Pick either the worker, the capitalist chance card or the worker chance card. I get a choice, you see, because I'm not allied with either of you.
Oh.
Right, I will pick a worker chance card because that's the kind of politically sound guy I am. integrity insurance against capitalist bribes. That's you, Bridget, of trade union officials. This card neutralises the capitalist chance card on bribe money.
Oh.
Right, well, that's just, I sort of
So you
that.
Need to keep that.
I keep that.
So if Bridget then tries to bribe you, you...
If she... I've got an anti-bribe thing.
So can you only reject me if you've got a card?
I think... Well, I don't know. Well, possibly.
If I'm really persuasive, might you not use that? Or do you have to? Are you bound by the rules of...
I think I've got a choice. I think basically you've got to be really nice. Both of you have to be really nice to me and Joel and try and persuade you. I've got to be part of your sort of nasty, unequal sort of, you know, exploitative world.
Okay.
And I've got to be part of Jeff's sort of, you know, chaotic workers' revolution, which is going to involve Jeff not talking to anyone because he doesn't like people. You know, so this is sort of kind of, it's a bit of a Hobson's choice, I would say.
Right.
Yeah, I'm probably not the person for the up the people.
It's my go, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, 9, 12.
Do you want to move? Do you want to?
Oh, this is me.
You.
1, 2, 3.
Oh!
It says chance for an alliance with the small shopkeepers.
Oh.
Well, we don't have a small shopkeeper play, so.
So is that nothing then?
Do you want? Maybe she should have a chance for an. Bridget should have a chance for an alliance with me, since I'm quite close to a small. No.
I think you should ally with the workers, Bridget. You seem the type. I think we could end this whole thing now by forming an alliance between the capitalists and the workers. We could usher in utopia.
There is the very comprehensive rules allow for this possibility. When there are less than 6 players in the game, a major class which lands on the alliance square of a minor class that is not represented by a player still receives the latter's alliance card and a bonus of 5 assets. Hurrah!
Oh my God.
The system is rigged.
The system is rigged
in favour
of the
capitalists.
It really is rigged, isn't it? 1, 2, 3, 4.
So
5.
Bridget gets the small shopkeeper's card.
Can I say something? Mm. There was a study into how people behave when they've got more money and more privileges. And this guy called Professor Piff, who lives in America, he set up these cameras and he filmed people playing Monopoly, but he gave one player loads more money and loads more houses. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I've seen this, yeah.
And like a bowl of sweets and snacks. And the person with all the extra stuff just started behaving like an absolute twat.
Is that right?
Yeah. Like demeaning the other person. And it's really, like, I'm not saying that you... I mean, I'm just saying it's
well,
really...
Well, I think for the capitalists, there's certainly no position to other people are behaving like a twat, frankly.
No, because I just got loads...
As you're counting your money.
I just got loads of extra money.
Do you feel you got twattery?
Yeah.
Sort of...
You're having
no, I don't think that I should have been given all that extra money for landing on that, which didn't really... And I feel that that's unfair and that I don't really want it. It hasn't made me want
to... Are
you
sure you're a capitalist?
...talk down to you all.
Yes.
And eat all the snacks on the table.
I think that's only... This is early days. Yeah.
Oh, it's early days.
Well, don't you think you might... But there is this study about showing that power... corrupts people's empathy.
Yeah,
there's
yes.
lots of studies that show this. In fact, we talked about it in an episode a few weeks ago.
Yes, there is. And actually, in his thing as well, he said what he did as well was he set up a camera on a road, a pedestrian crossing, to see which type of cars stopped and which didn't.
Really?
And all the 4x4s,
like Chelsea tractors,
pretty much ran people over. And all the people in like crappy little cars always stopped.
That's
and
amazing.
Waved and... Yeah,
so
he did loads of these studies. What he's saying was you can have money and have empathy, but it does, you know, it does basically make you into a worse person.
Well, I really hope it doesn't happen to you as a result of this game.
Well, we'll see, won't we?
Yeah. If sort of...
I mean,
if your nearest and dearest end up saying, say you've had your characters changed, you can put it down to this moment.
That particular study you're talking about.
Yeah.
This is a plug, incidentally. It was one of the inspirations behind my book, which I got published a couple of years ago.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
What's the book called?
It's called The Sea Stone Sword. It's a fantasy pirate adventure, and it's all about the acquisition of power and what it does to people.
And what it does to people, yeah.
It's totally true.
Available from all good bookshops, and also Amazon.
He did a Professor Piff did that TED Talk, which was inadvertently hilarious, I think.
We should go and look at Professor Piff's TED Talk. We will link to it.
Yeah, and I would happily be the person in the experiment who gets given the power and money just to see how it goes for me.
I want to be the person running people over.
I mean, basically, Jeff should be the should have been the capitalist, shouldn't he? But I think it is Jeff's throw.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is.
Should we do a cracker, Bridget, while we're...
Yes, please, I'd love to. Oh!
I never win crackers. Oh, I actually won the pink hat.
Oh, I like that
hat.
Smell. Did I win? There's nothing inside.
No, I got the pink hat, actually.
Oh, I've got a plastic frog. What am I supposed to do with that?
That's really... I've now gone for the pink
Joel, hat. Shall we do a cracker?
Oh, go for it.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
I won.
Did you not get a joke, Bridget?
Oh, did I get a joke? Oh, I need that.
You fools. I am the joke.
Oh, you flick it.
You got a deck of cards.
A deck of cheating cards.
Now, I think
Bridget's got the joke.
What does Santa suffer from if he gets stuck in a chimney?
What does Santa suffer from if he gets stuck in a chimney?
I don't know, Bridget. What does Santa suffer from if he... Claustrophobia. I tell you, this guy, you know, he...
Did you write that?
No.
I've always wondered who would be going to write the Christmas joke.
Have you got yours?
I'm trying to open it. I can't. I'm a failure. It just says magic poker cards.
I think I need to move Jeff. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Jeff, you're on chance.
Okay. So
you're on worker's chance.
Take a card here.
Worker's chance card.
Okay. Your class allies have lost confidence in your leadership.
Oh, God, not surprising, is it, really? I mean, honestly, this happened pretty early in the game.
I want to keep a closer eye on what to do. Take all your allies and go back to the beginning of that stage of the class struggle on which you stand.
Oh, it's only your second
go. Go back to the beginning.
Back to the beginning?
It's back to the beginning of the whole game.
Oh, my God.
Have you got any advice for me if people lose confidence in your leadership?
You bastard. I think it's basically you go back to where you started, do you think?
No.
No, he wasn't there. He started there.
Oh, right to the beginning.
Well, just read us the last bit again.
It says, go back to the beginning of that stage of the class struggle on which you stand.
What?
No, I think it must be the square you started that term. I think we shouldn't be too mean to you, but I mean... I'm sorry about your leadership. I'll sort of maybe afterwards advise you what some of the tricks to get through this. Not that ever happened to me.
Five, seven. Six, seven.
Right, you are the mortarboard. Yeah.
Another chance.
A chance.
Now you get to choose whether you want a capitalist chance.
We've
or
had two workers once, so I feel
you're
like
going for a capitalist chance.
Sexually repressed people generally make good, docile workers. So you develop a sex education program which makes young people disgusted by their natural functions. Easily worth a couple of assets.
Right.
So that's why I'm so disgusted by my natural functions. It was all down to the sex education.
Did Mr. Piff do any talk about that at all?
No, that wasn't included. It was trafficked. Again,
I think you need to give, as a banker, assets. I think you need to give two assets to the student.
Oh, my God.
I know. That's this game, remember, was written in the 1970s. We did edit out one or two things, I think. Right, it's me.
It means well. It's just some of the terminology
exactly.
Perhaps updated so well.
Right, that's a six.
Six.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Workers organise a working class party. Well, that's good news, isn't it? I mean, this is square, what is it, square 16? Workers organise a working class party. Only when they stop relying on capitalist parties to represent them can the workers hope to win in class struggle. Workers' three assets.
Three, yeah.
That's quite a lot for that.
It is quite a lot, isn't it? Well, I mean, it's, you know, presumably the workers have lost confidence in Jeff's leadership, so they sort of have to form their own party. Right, there you go.
Right.
What's that?
12.
Is someone going?
Yeah. We're all struggling to do maths here.
Development of a socialist press to present workers' point of view.
No, that's a red one. So, doesn't get anything from the red one.
I don't get anything from
right.
that.
Right, Geoffrey?
It's good that we've got a socialist press, though. Yeah, let's focus on the positives.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
6, 10, 12.
Shall I move you?
Right, yes, please.
12. Oh, now that's a sort of red and a blue.
Which says?
Successor of the TVA, that's the Tennessee Valley Authority, shows that production.
Do you know that from playing this game? Or
I know that from being a nerd. can go. It's a thing set up by Franklin Roosevelt. It was a kind of project to kind of employ lots of people. I think it was to do with power or energy. Shows that production can go on without capitalism.
Yes, workers two assets, capitalists one debit.
Now, I think presumably Jeff just gets two assets for that, doesn't he? I don't think Bridget loses anything.
Oh, so we can't take away her.
I don't mind if you take some off me.
You're a bad capitalist.
I've got loads. I don't need it.
Right, you need to get into character more. Right.
Bridget's like the lady from the
yeah, she is. She's a patriotic millionaire. We had this patriotic millionaire on who was a woman from America who was sort of anti-tax cuts, anti-Trump, you know, said, I don't need all this money. I want to pay higher taxes. And in fact, we've had an email recently from somebody who wants to set up a patriotic millionaires in Britain, which is good.
I mean, I haven't got anything to get, but if I did have...
You'd be part of the patriotic millionaires.
That is 15.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
Same as me. So you do get three assets from this. From development of a socialist press.
Excellent.
To present workers' point of view.
Thanks, the canary.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's just say Joel is playing with a mascot. Joel has a panda.
A little panda that says, I love Ed Miliband.
I got it for
my good friend Gemma. Hello, Gemma.
That's so nice.
And is that from your merch store, Ed? I mean, where
yeah, exactly. I think it's from
Amazon.
It's from Amazon. Do they sell I Love Ed Miliband?
Yeah, there's like pandas, there's sloths.
Did you not know?
I didn't know.
All kinds of different sloths. Animals.
Maybe I should invest. Oh my goodness, 14.
Are you competitive with games?
I am quite competitive, yeah.
With everything.
And with sport and things like that.
Sport, if I was competitive in sport, that would be bad. But yeah, I'm quite competitive.
He's competitive with the podcast chart.
I'm very competitive with the podcast chart. Neurotically,
emailing me at 3 a.m. saying we've dropped one position. What do we need to do? Joel's got a chance card.
I've landed on a chance card. I've gone through a workers' chance card, ladies and gentlemen. You join a protest against the government for paying businessmen, farmers $3 billion each year not to grow food. Don't they know a lot of people are hungry? Don't they care? Collective action moves you forward two spaces.
Well, isn't that nice? Collective action does move you forward, and presumably you get the...
How come you've gone all the way over there?
Well, he's doing quite well, isn't he?
You're not accusing the academics of cheating.
Lockout. You're on the strike lockout square. You seem to get... He gets three assets, presumably, for that.
But look where you are. Look where
I know.
You
well, okay. Yeah, don't rub it in. Thanks very much, Bridget. Remember, I'm competitive.
You're really lagging behind.
You need to give him three assets. Tell us about...
Three.
The turn that your comedy has taken this year and in the last year, Bridget.
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I...
One of the reasons we set up the podcast was to make people more cheerful.
Yes.
It hasn't felt very cheerful for lots of people, has it?
What, the last year?
The last year or two.
No, it hasn't, but you do have to... So I'm trying to be much happier and to try and find... joy in the everyday, because I think that rolling news is sort of getting everybody down.
Yeah.
But I think that if you can remember that otters have a stone pocket on their by their paws, they have a little pocket that they keep stones in.
Is that true?
Yeah. They keep little stones in. They
otters.
Have stone pockets.
Like a little built-in glove pocket.
Like a built-in pocket. For
what do they keep in there?
Stones.
And what are they doing with the stones?
They play with them.
They're just amusing it's themselves the cutest with their stones.
Thing. I did. I look because I cried when Trump retweeted the Britain First thing. I felt just... I find that I don't get angry anymore. I just get profoundly, like a depression, like weeps over, like I just feel really heavy. And so I saw the otter stone thing, and I also saw a guy doing the cinnamon challenge. That cheered me up. I think we have to remember that for every Trump, there's a middle-aged man doing a cinnamon challenge.
What is a cinnamon challenge?
Oh, my God, Ed.
Sorry.
You have to
I'm
watch.
So not good on popular culture.
So cinnamon so, and the spice rack over
no,
there.
No, don't. You can die. Don't do it. It's really dangerous. You get a teaspoon of cinnamon, and you try and swallow it, and it congeals at the back of your throat, and you can't breathe.
And people video themselves doing this and then put it up on YouTube. Straight.
To cheer yourself up, you watch people almost dying. Yeah.
Well, they also the cheese rolling is really funny to watch.
What's the cheese rolling?
The cheese roll in Gloucester, where people hurl themselves down a really steep hill and really hurt themselves.
Why is it called cheese rolling?
Because they're chasing a cheese.
You've heard of this. It's a great
I have vaguely heard of it.
Great English tradition.
The cheese roll, it's called. But right. It's not a cheese roll.
You've not done the cheese roll.
Oh, my God. It's like a cliff. You run, and the hill is not managed, so it's covered in brambles and thistle. People really hurt themselves. It
to
was banned.
To go back to Ed's original question, like, sorry. I've seen many of your Edinburgh shows over the years, and is this what we're expecting now, sort of cinnamon challenge and cheese rollers? It's quite the change of direction.
No, I mean, so what it is that I am trying to be a happier person now, so if you come and see me, yeah, but I keep remembering all the terrible things, so...
Your show in Edinburgh about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yes, and I saw you. I didn't know you were coming, and I just saw you standing up by
a
pillar.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant.
It was really...
Is that off-putting?
It's surreal.
Is it off-putting when you see someone
well,
like that
if
in the
you're
audience?
Not expecting... Because you were...
I was leader at that point.
Then you were, you know, quite somebody.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to now, yes. Thanks very much. You are not invited for next Christmas.
That was what I felt bad that you had to stand up.
No, it was fine. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
But don't you think, I know I'm going to sound a bit eccentric when I say this, but don't you think that even in the chaos, which is very depressing, and Brexit and Trump, there are sort of seeds of hope?
There are seeds of hope. There's lots of seeds.
The activism of people, the, you know, energy that people have had.
Yeah, the
you know,
marches when he was inaugurated.
The marches, like, the fact that the sort of paedophile Roy Moore bloke only lost by 1% is not great, but, you know...
But he's still lost.
He's still lost.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They're
Le Pen.
Sort of...
I mean, with Marine Le Pen, you can say, well, it's really. I mean, she had a lot of people supporting her, but she still wasn't elected.
And have you noticed?
You can look at it both ways.
Have you noticed a change in your audiences?
Yeah. When I used to talk about really awful things about female oppression, you could. It wasn't polarising for an audience. That's the really weird thing that I think that some of the things that I used to talk about...
Which were kind of as heavy as it gets in a way.
Were as heavy as it can get. But when I started talking about Brexit, that's when I really started splitting rooms and having to think about really how I did it. Because every single room, my audience was split right down
there. That's surprising. Is that true in London, as true in London as it is around the country?
So I did Edinburgh, and then I did London, and then I toured around the place. And I don't know, I think I made it quite clear in my blurb which way I, you know. But, I mean, I think you can still do it in a way that's quite inclusive. I mean, I don't think anybody's got what they wanted. And so I suppose that's your angle. It's like, I voted to remain. Lots of people who I know voted leave. I don't feel like I got what I wanted. Obviously, I don't want to leave the EU. But they haven't got what they wanted either. So we are, while we thought that the... You know, you say we're a divided nation. People say we're a divided nation. It was such a shock. But this should unite us, really.
Who are the people you know who voted Brexit?
Yeah.
Why? Who are they?
For
why?
Many different reasons.
Because your audience
aren't good enough.
Your audience aren't necessarily the type of people you would have as your stereotype of a Brexit voter.
No, but they voted for all sorts of different reasons, some quite odd. But it's not... But it is awkward with people now. I mean, you do decide to not talk about politics.
And what kind are they? Whereas family members or before. Friends? Or
yeah, friends, family. It's awkward. You know, I've got family who support Trump in America, but
family in America.
Yeah. So, and you just have to agree to disagree and move on, I think.
And can you find things to unite yourself? If you think about the Brexiteer, people who you know who voted Brexit, can you find things to unite with them on?
I find it very hard.
But don't you think that the things out... I mean, okay, Brexit is like a massive elephant in the room, but don't you think that outside Brexit, you know, I find in my constituency lots of people voted for Brexit, and this is what sometimes Remainers I don't think quite fully get... They voted for Brexit not just because of immigration or Europe, but because they want a new beginning. They wanted things to be different. Some of the similar things that motivated people to vote for Jeremy Corbyn motivated people to vote for Brexit.
Well, this is the thing.
They wanted big change.
Yeah, but the vote wasn't just about membership of the EU. It was about so many different things. It was about inequality and people feeling got no voice and lumping everybody in the same... people hate politicians since the expenses scandal, really, and don't have any trust in them. But also in that... people started then putting experts and academics and economists, and people all started feeling like all these people were the same. And that's the thing that I think we have to really keep
on. But don't you think there is common... But when you say inequality, when you say inequality and all those things, don't you think that is where the common ground is?
Yes. But someone needs to, you know... I don't know how we start to unite, but we need some really good leaders, and I'm not... You know.
No offence, Jeff, but...
No, yeah.
Street parties with games of struggle.
I don't know.
Struggle.
There's nobody for anybody. I don't think... Theresa May seems to have less authority than Hackney Council Planning Department. David Davis couldn't negotiate his way out of a poncho. Jeremy Corbyn, nice as he seems, like a very nice person. I'm not sure... Well, you know... I don't know. This is very controversial, you know. I think he's a very... nice person, but I don't know if he's the one who will unite everybody.
The tactic seems to be to say, you know, people voted for Brexit, and Labour's messaging seems to be we're going to go with Brexit, but we would have done it better, which I think is the only position an opposition can really take at the moment.
I don't know. I feel like everybody's 52-48, and I felt that nobody was saying I wanted to remain, and I am the person for all the people who did. I feel like everything's being sort of fudged a bit.
But I think that's what... Well, look, I think that's... you shouldn't talk about Brexit at Christmas, but I think we're proving that. But I think that's what Jeremy and are trying to do, which is to... You know, and that's why people don't like it, because they think it's a fudge, but it isn't a fudge. It's trying to speak to both people who, you know, in my constituency, 72% leave, and the people who voted Remain. And that is really, yeah, exactly. You're saying you're raising up at the 72%. It's a, you know, big vote. That's and it's uniting those people, not just by telling them that they're wrong. I mean, anyway, I think it's your role.
Yeah, no, but it is. I mean, what does everybody want? Everybody wants, you know, the NHS. We all need the same things. We all need a better infrastructure in this country. And that's something that we can all unite against.
And also, the thing is
that the amount of money that it's costing, it's not the right time for us to be spending this money on that. It isn't.
But unfortunately, the referendum, you know, it happened. And I didn't want the blasted referendum, but... You know, where's David Cameron now? I mean, he's sitting
in a sheep insulated man shed eating cheese with that bloke from Blur. That's where he is.
I'm quite nervous. Ed's about to open a bottle of sparkling grape.
This is going to go really wrong.
Given your relationship with inanimate objects,
it's going to go really wrong.
But do you want me to do it?
No, it'll be something to remember Christmas by. Now you, I think you.
I haven't moved.
You look a bit unnerved, Bridget. You're the hat there.
Let's get her in the eye. 1, 2, 3.
Don't aim it at me.
1, 2, 3. Don't point that thing at me.
9. State.
10. It's a 10, Bridget.
What?
It's a 10. 5 + 4 + 1. I'm sorry to be a pedant.
So where am I there?
Yes.
People say you can't trust Labour with the economy.
Right. What is it? Joel, can you read it?
It says...
I don't get it because it's...
More trade unions.
More trade unions. Workers, 3 assets.
Oh, right, but that's not a sort of Bridget Square, is it?
Do you want me to do it?
No, I'm going to do it. I'm going to insist. This is
okay, here we go.
I know it is taking ages, just no
use. It's painful to watch, isn't it?
Have you opened a bottle before?
I have opened a bottle before. It's just...
Twist it.
I am twisting. It's not my natural forte.
Righty-tighty.
Here we go.
Hold on to it. Don't let it go into my face.
No. This is like giving you good material for the Milliverse.
Yes,
Joel,
of course.
It's fair to say. I mean, honestly, we thought you might be running out of material, so here
it's
we
like,
go.
Shall I do it?
No,
let's never have to racing drivers on the podium.
Give me a glass and.
Whoa!
Oh, what an anti-climax.
But there was a perfection.
but nobody got hurt. I mean, that's the miracle. That's the Christmas miracle.
I mean, don't speak too soon.
It was a very quiet pop, though, wasn't it?
Well, I know, but I don't think I did it pretty... I mean, I did it pretty well, actually.
You did it extremely
well. I mean, my wife would have been incredibly surprised at how well that went. She would have expected it to sort of go really badly. Right, Jeffrey, it's your turn to roll. I'm calling him Jeffrey because it's Christmas, and that's what
it annoys me.
Yeah, it is sort of it annoys you.
Thank you, Ed. Band
14, I think.
That's nice.
Yeah, where are my workers?
Oh, sorry.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. What does it say? I can't quite.
State legalizes gambling.
A state legalizes gambling. How does that impact on the workers?
It doesn't seem to impact on the workers. You pass me your glass. You'll go.
Do you not get any assets or anything?
I would have
if I'd landed on that, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
I seem to get assets for just sitting here, really.
Right. I think we should drink a toast. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
And here is to a cheerful, optimistic 2018.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's going to be great. Also the otters. We've always got the otters.
Otters. And we might have aliens.
Go on.
It's an interstellar object being seen in our solar system.
Is that right?
Yes.
Really?
It's sort of terrifying as well, though.
Wow.
It's unidentified and the wrong shape to be a normal asteroid type thing.
Are you quite... You're a follower of...
No, it's just in all the news.
Well, I hadn't noticed.
Is it on course to hit the Earth?
No.
Was it Lambert?
It's moving away from us, I think.
Remember when Lembit Opik asked his first question in Parliament? It was about what would happen. Lembit Opik, the first time he ever stood up in Parliament, was to ask what plans have been made if there was an asteroid on course for the Earth. What we do?
That was his finest hour, I think.
People just laughed at him, but I think it's a good question.
It is a good question.
I mean, it's quite hard to prepare for it, though, isn't it?
For a massive asteroid.
Oh, I think you're there, actually.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Oh, look, now this is really exciting because Joel has landed on Confrontation General Strike.
Right.
What does that mean?
One of the yellow squares. And the yellow squares, let me just tell you about the yellow squares. Confrontations. There are six confrontation squares. Excuse me. Life in the factory, two elections, two general strikes, when all the workers lay down their tools, and the revolution. The revolution is, I think, at the end. If either major class or its allies lands on a confrontation square, it has a choice whether or not to call a confrontation.
Mm.
Non-allied minor classes, that's you, Joel, cannot call a confrontation. Ah. No, sorry. And only the major classes, not even their allies, can call the final confrontation, which is the revolution. Right, okay, well, we're not having a confrontation, but that is just a sort of...
Isn't one of the squares nuclear war?
Yeah.
Is that not the final confrontation? Look.
Yeah, that's bad news. Nuclear war is bad news.
Joel, have you got anything planned for the Milliverse for Christmas?
Well, I usually do this... Well, last year I did this thing called Millimass, which was celebrating Ed Miliband's birthday.
Which is Christmas Eve.
Which is Christmas Eve. Indeed it is. Speaking of which, Ed, your birthday is coming up.
I know, it's...
So I thought Joel has a little something.
Aww.
I got you a little gift.
Oh, that's so kind of you.
And I was thinking it's unfair to get you a gift without getting Jeff something. So, Jeff, I got you a bag of Revels.
Oh, lovely. Love a Revel. I think my highlight of 2017 was my misshapen Revel.
True.
It was a thing of
great.
What's
your finest moment, actually?
So what are you going
to
order?
Hear about his misshapen Revel?
His misshapen?
Got a misshapen Revel, yeah. It was
what shape was it?
It was the shape
cocktail
of an
sausage.
Earbud. It was like a small cocktail sausage or a large earbud. Yeah, it was quite something.
What was inside?
It was just chocolatey. We ate it together. Like it was like Lady and the Tramp with the spaghetti. Me and Ed with this one Revel. It was really quite a beautiful moment.
It was quite a romantic moment.
Yeah, it sounds like it was. Yeah. Who did you break it or bite it? And
both bit it. Yeah,
you
that's
bit
how
it.
Intimate things have gone.
Oh, look at that! That is a brilliant
Let
present.
Me see.
So, Joel, you're a genius. So, Joel has got me a framed photo of that infamous tweet by David Cameron on the 4th of May, 2015, at 7:26 a.m. Britain faces a simple and inescapable choice, stability and strong government with me, or chaos with Ed Miliband.
Oh,
that is a fantastic... Honestly, that is great. That is totally... That is brilliant.
Where are you going to put it?
Oh, I'm going to give it pride of place.
toilet wall, that.
I think it might even be better than the toilet wall, actually. Mantelpiece.
Yeah.
I think it's your role.
Oh, is it? Oh, no, I did that and went around there.
Oh, did you?
Oh, so what did you get, Bridget?
Thursday. Yeah, but I didn't get anything because it's red.
But
the square was, just in case people want to know, capitalists throw many workers' leaders in prison.
So it's worked out well for you.
Doesn't sound like you, does it, really?
No, I'm trying to commit to it, though.
Someone is. 6, 5, 11, 12. Where am I?
Shall I move
yes,
you?
Yes, please.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Male and female workers unite to fight sexism.
Oh.
Workers' three assets. I'm afraid you're not allowed to be happy about that, Bridget, because you're the capitalist. You don't want them. And I mean, you've got to get into character here.
Well, I think that's a ridiculous idea.
Exactly. So, Joel, while you're rolling, and given my bottle-opening skills turned out to be absolutely sort of supreme and brilliant, I think Joel found a recent cutting from the Daily Mail.
Yeah, it's one of the first
Which is the first time I mentioned the Daily Mail, when I set my shirt on fire at a... at a
did you?
Candles. I have problems with candles, really.
He set a copy of the Financial Times on fire in a cafe recently.
And I had sort of forgotten, conveniently, that this was... I thought this was the first time it had happened, but it had happened once before. It was at a bar, and I was resting casually on the bar, and there was a candle, and it sort of... Whoosh.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Are you okay? Like,
I was absolutely fine, yeah.
He's a real-life Mr. Bean.
I know, it's true. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
While we've been talking about this, something very dramatic has happened to the capitalists in the board game.
The capitalists have landed on the confrontation square. Okay, here we are. In a confrontation, each side adds up its assets and debits, allies account together, and the side with the highest number of assets after debits are subtracted wins. In the case of the elections, a general strike, blah, blah, blah. In the case of revolution, winning the confrontation is winning the game. So
so basically, who has the most assets is the winner at this
to
point.
Land on the revolution square, hang on, class has to get an exact number on the dice. You did. In revolution, the points of one's allies only count if they've arrived in the revolution square. A major class, that's you, Bridget, which needs these points to win, should not call this confrontation unless its allies have joined it in the final square. Now, basically, I think if you've got more assets than Jeff, you can call the confrontation... And the capitalists have won.
Can I not join my assets together with those of my allies?
You haven't got any allies, unfortunately, because of your failure
of
leadership.
You don't want to be my allies. Okay, I know how many assets I have here.
You got yours counted up, Joel. You've got yours counted up, Ed.
I've got mine counted.
Oh, well, okay. I haven't counted mine. Hang on a minute.
So without allies, I have 11 assets.
Right.
How many assets are you holding there?
11.
I've got 11 as well.
I've got 14.
So it's 11-11 between the workers
it's
and the capitalists.
It's 11-11 workers and capitalists. And the farmers and the students hold the balance of power. Joel has 14 assets.
Yeah, I'd say we are now in the negotiations here.
I don't want to win if that...
Which means up the workers! Power to the people!
You're the first capitalist in world history who doesn't want to win. We chose the right capitalist for this game. You don't think you should win?
I would reject your money if you want to.
Basically, so we can all go in with Jeff.
Yeah.
And we're living in a Jeffocracy.
Socialist utopia Jeffocracy.
Despite your failure of leadership.
So you won. Well done.
Yeah. Well, I think we all
because
won.
Because you were a good capitalist.
Because you're such a good capitalist. We all want.
You're an ethical capitalist.
You're an ethical capitalist. And that, you know, so you can sort of feel good about yourself, not just because of the otters.
Setting an example to the greens of this world.
Never mind the patriotic millionaires.
Well, we have the power to change our, you know.
Board games.
Yes.
What's going to be your first act? You get inaugurated January the 1st as a result of playing class struggle. You take the reins of power. They come to you and say...
Yeah, I got it. I'm going to straight away, I'm issuing a decree to get rid of the raisin-flavoured revels. No one likes them.
Is there a raisin revels?
Yeah, I mean, you're dicing with danger every time your hand goes into that bag, Bridget.
I think what you can say about him is, you know, he ran on a manifesto of big change. And he's delivering on what he said, and that, you know, what could be more helpful to restore faith in politics than that?
I think we face a simple and inescapable choice. You know, good revels with Jeff or chaos with Ed Miliband.
Exactly. We choose the good revels.
Thanks very much for listening to our Christmas podcast. We've got another one coming out on New Year's Day. Thanks, as ever, to our team who work so hard. Emma Corsham, who produces and edits the show, and Alex Feisbrice, who does all the research and backup with Lindsay Todd. Thanks to Gail Lofthouse for being our announcer, James Deacon for making our idents, Ed Seed for providing the music, and Emily Power, who did our artwork.
You do that so well.
Well, I do a good job of remembering
them all. You do it so well, yeah.
You know, I had to mop up you not remembering people's names
I know. Thank you for rubbing that in.
So do you want to thank our guests then?
I would. I want to thank in particular Bridget Christie and Joel Corner for joining us. Bridget, tell us about your tour, your 2018 tour.
Right. Well, that kicks off in March in Glasgow and then all around the country and then ending up in London in the autumn.
Can I come?
Yes, please. And you can sit down this time.
Right.
And, and all dates are on my website.
And what's the name of the tour?
What Now?
What Now?
What Now? Good title
what
for
do we
a
do
tour.
Now? Yeah.
And Joel, people can follow the Milliverse on Twitter.
At the Milliverse. I'm also at Joel Corner.
And you don't just do the Milliverse, you do, but you write books.
That's not a full-time job.
No. It's not my full-time job, unfortunately. I wish it was. I wish I was being paid to do it. But no, I write books. I've had two novels published, The Sea Stone Sword and The Sky Slayer, both released by Grimbold Books. And they'll be on joelcorner.com.
We really want to thank Richard and Rhianne Douglas because they sent us the board game Class Struggle. Unfortunately, I couldn't lay my hands on the Miliband family copy of Class Struggle. And they
it
were...
sounds like you're apportioning blame there a little. Like somebody's scarpered off to America with it, perhaps.
No, I think it just wasn't available, immediately available, but it's absolutely brilliant that they sent it to us, and we will send it back to them in the condition which it arrived, which is sort of relatively pristine, given it's a 40-year-old game. And if you want to go and buy Class Struggle, it's not available in the shops. Maybe will lead to it being reissued as a result of this podcast. Now time for the sign-off. She's been Bridget Christie, the capitalist.
He's been Ed Miliband, the farmers.
He's been Joel Corner, the students.
He's been Jeff Lloyd, the worker.
Up the workers! It's the Jeffocracy!
And these have been Christmas.
Reasons to be cheerful.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas.
Let's go, Jeff. One, two, three.
I think it's a hit.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.